now our feature presentation.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. It's known as Pascal's Wager, the conviction that believing in and following Jesus Christ is the wisest way to live, even if God and heaven do not exist. Reason being, the alternative is far worse, if hell does exist. Some Christians don't like this idea of religion as a kind of fire insurance, so to speak, and neither did Bishop Carlton Pearson. In the late 90s, Pearson shocked his large Pentecostal congregation in Tulsa, Oklahoma, by publicly questioning the nature of hell, salvation, and God.
People have been saying that I stopped believing in hell.
I heard a voice say,
everyone's already saved.
No, no, you can't just rewrite the Bible.
I'm not rewriting anything, I'm just rereading it.
You speak the word of God in this church.
That God loves us all!
Depending on your point of view, there are scriptures that support and refute Pearson's argument. The stakes for being wrong are high, spiritually and societally. And Pearson learned that the hard way. His crisis of faith is the subject of a new Netflix biopic called Come Sunday. It's our selection for this month's 1A Movie Club, and we will discuss this film, spoilers and all. So, if you haven't seen Come Sunday, but you plan to, you might want to listen to this later. Joining us from KPCC Public Radio in Los Angeles, as always, is the honorary vice president of the 1A Movie Club. John Horn is the host of KPCC's daily arts and entertainment program, The Frame. John, welcome back to 1A.
Always happy to be with you.
Joining us here in studio is Juliet Vidral, a contributing writer with Sojourners, a nonprofit focused on faith and social justice. Juliet, welcome.
Glad to be here.
The story behind Come Sunday was featured years ago on This American Life. And joining us from WBEZ Public Radio in Chicago is Ira Glass, the creator, executive producer, and host of This American Life. He also co-produced Come Sunday. Ira, glad to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
Let's start with you, Ira. Come Sunday is adapted from an episode of the show in 2005 called Heretics. Here is a piece of that episode of This American Life.
I miss my people that packed this place out and came by the thousands, and I baptized them, dedicated their babies, and saw them play together, and ran into them at theaters and saw them in the mall, and they'd hug my neck and the babies would kiss me, and I would hold their little babies and preach to them on Sundays and pray for them on Saturday nights. I've been studying right now, getting ready for them in the morning. Built this whole place for them. And I miss being able to pick up the phone and call my friends all over the country and say, I'm going to be in your city in a couple of weeks. Let's get together. Oh, would you come and speak for us? And, you know, that whole world, that's all gone. At least it appears like it is for me. I'm not celebrated among those people. They don't think about me anymore. It's like I died, and they mourned my death, and they're pretty much over it.
That was the voice of the Bishop Carlton Pearson from a 2005 episode of This American Life. Ira, how did this film come about? What was it about this story in particular that made you want to adapt it for the screen?
I mean, first of all, it's just a great story. It's big enough to make a movie out of. It's a man who stands up for what he thinks is right and loses everything because of it, loses fame and fortune and nearly his family and everything. And then the other reason why we wanted to do it was because I feel very aware that there are very few films or TV shows that are set inside the evangelical church. And I feel like generally the way that Pentecostals are portrayed in the media and even in the news as these sort of cartoonishly, I don't know, doctrinaire people, and I've said this now in many interviews, but like there came a point 20 years ago now when I just became very aware of that the evangelicals who I knew and was close to were very different from the ones who I was seeing in films and on TV and in the news, and I felt like in that gap was something that we could do a lot of reporting about the way that fundamentalists live their lives and how they see themselves, and the evangelicals who I knew were like warm and funny and took very seriously Jesus's commandments to love each other and to be in the world as a force for love. And so what was attractive about this was that it could be an entire story set in the church with a very dramatic plot line where everybody would be in the church and the people wouldn't be cartoonish.
Well, certainly this story resonated with a lot of people when it first aired. Larry tweeted, "I found the original This American Life episode on Pearson very moving. Dealing with the problem of hell is where my own exit from Christianity started." Ira, what about the process of adapting an audio story for film? I know that part of what people love about public radio in general and This American Life in particular is that it is so cinematic. So you've kind of already made the movie back in 2005. It was just a movie in our head. What about having to make the movie for our eyes? What's that like?
I mean, it's very different. The rules of making a movie are very different. The way the scenes work are very different. I mean, there are certain things in terms of plot structure that are exactly the same. And so in the movies that we've made, talking to the screenwriters and the directors, it's always a very easy conversation because we understand story the same way. But in a film, you can do things with the language of film is so different. Like there's a moment in the film where Carlton's kind of at the bottom and has to kind of summon himself to kind of get it together and create a new life for himself. And our director, Josh Marston, a great director, he was just like, well, we need to signal this change that he's going through visually. And they created a scene that didn't happen in real life where our movie Carlton, played by Chiwetel Ejiofor, goes to a river and kind of baptizes himself in a river, you know, just like leans down by a river on the side of the highway and does it. And it's a really beautiful scene. Never happened at all. Like the thing that it's representing happened completely. Carlton did totally, you know, remake himself after he lost everything, but like that kind of like the visual grammar of film. Or there's a scene late in the film where one of the things that was exciting about doing the film is that we actually got into things that we didn't get into in the radio story because film was longer and we had more time on it, and the screenwriter spent hundreds of hours with Carlton, and so there are all these scenes with him and Oral Roberts that we don't get into. Oral Roberts is mentor, and everything in those scenes is reported out and true, and scenes with him and his wife, and there's a scene with his wife. In different drafts of the film, we were just like, how much should we show the wife, just this stuff going on in their marriage, because it was very easy to relate to and really interesting, and we knew we'd have great actors for it. And at some point, the screenwriter was like, well, we'll just have her say, get up. And like, and literally, like we summarize like a few years of their marriage, and her just saying like,
just saying, get up,
in two words, get up. Yeah, this very dramatic moment.
I do want to get to John and Juliet in a minute, but I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to ask how involved Bishop Pearson was in the story. He's listed in the credits as a consultant. What did that involve?
It involved him like talking to our screenwriter for hours and hours and hours, and sometimes we would just wonder like often in writing the screenplay, like what really happened here, what were the moments, and look for real anecdotes to put in. And then he came to set until sometimes Chiwetel would just say like, I don't think I can have him around when I shoot this scene, like it makes me too self-conscious, but he was on set a bunch.
I would love to hear from John and Juliet about the film. Ira, this may be a little weird hearing their reviews, but bear with us. I think they both like the film. John Horn, let's start with you. How many stars out of 5 would you give Come Sunday, and why?
No fractions this month.
Thank you.
I'm a king of fractions.
I've been begging since we inaugurated the movie club. He's always like 4 7/8. Thank you for just giving us solid stars.
No, I'm going to decimal points. No, I am. I'm going to give it a 4. I really like the film. And the other thing you should know about me is not only do I host a public radio show, I'm a longtime film reporter. I am the son of an Episcopal priest. So I grew up in the church, and I understand the issues that are central to this film very well and very personally. And I thought it really portrayed that argument incredibly, I guess the right word is faithfully. So I'm going to give Come Sunday 4 stars.
Juliet Vidral, how many stars out of 5 and why?
I would also give it 4 out of 5 stars. I am also, like Donna, I'm a pastor's kid, but Pentecostal pastors. And it resonated a lot with me, and the questions I thought were truthful, and I thought the portrayal was honest and thoughtful.
There's a lot to dig into, but Julia, could you begin to kind of walk us into this argument about the nature of hell? Carlton Pearson was not the first person to raise this, and it seems to have been a growing theological question in the last few decades.
Sure. I am not a theologian. I have worked for multiple churches and Christian ministries.
Understood.
Something that I've thought about. And this is a question that has come up even recently in more of the white non-Pentecostal evangelical church when Rob Bell wrote his book Love Wins and was also, you know, farewelled by John Piper and other Christian leaders. The question, it's a legitimate question of, is hell real and is it literal? Does God send people there? Do people choose to go there on their own? C.S. Lewis famously wrote, there's a certain point when God will say to us, thy will be done. And if we just don't choose God, then we don't choose God. And then there are others who would say, we all get there. And others who will say, you're definitely going to burn. So it's a very complicated conversation.
In Centerville, Virginia, Timmert is on the line. Hi, Timmert. What's on your mind? And first of all, am I saying your name correctly?
Yes, as close as it gets.
Excellent. What's on your mind?
So this movie really resonated with me. I was born and raised in Ethiopia in a very strict Orthodox family. And I grew up seeing people so devoted to goodness, to church, you know, human as all of us, and they have their own things, you know, they make mistakes and everything. And when I was around my teens, I had so many questions of all the contradictions in that particular Christian religion. And I ventured into Pentecostal Christian, and Reza Aslan, the author, also dives into this when he says, that personal relationship with Christ and salvation is such a great, you know, comforting path that a lot of people are attracted to it. But then comes the burden of evangelism. You know, why was I saved? Why did I get to say that prayer? And my parents didn't, and my sisters didn't, when they're great human beings. And I am against taking any religious scripture literally. The times that they were written, all their translations, the intent behind the people who translated them and, left some books out of the Bible in particular because it was easier to rule people. Mm-hmm. Because if you have a fear of something, then you're much more open to be ruled or to be told what to do. I think we have brains. I think we have hearts that we have to follow. Doubt is human. It's okay to ask the question, to notice contradictions. Mm-hmm. I think Christ had a message of love and inclusion, and I think that transcends anything else that's out there for me. So it really resonated with me on many different levels.
Before I let you go, could I ask you, how are you seeing your fellow Christians engage with these questions? I know depending on what kind of a faith community you're in, expressing doubt can feel immediately heretical. And then other faith communities, they're like, okay, let's just work this through. What are you seeing?
I'm seeing the former. And with the political environment in America right now, there's, you know, polarization and all sorts of things. You can't really talk about anything without feeling like that person is the other. Fighting each other on things that I believe that I was taught that. Mm. And I see a lot of that. But what I really try and say to my friends and other people that I engage in conversations with is that if you were born in Iran, if you were raised by a devoted Muslim family who taught you good standards, good humanity, you would have, you know, been an adult that also taught that. Because as humans, we want to share that, as the goodness of what we've heard.
Right.
If
right.
I shop at Target and I find something really cheap and I see the person buying it for really expensive elsewhere, I would want to share that, saying, go to Target and get it.
Right.
So we have that urge, but sharing our perspective shouldn't be alienating. It shouldn't be a fight. Mm-hmm. It's okay to find out, to doubt, to venture in, to research of anything that we hear or we were raised, born and raised into.
Well, I appreciate you calling in. Thanks very much for sharing that with us. Ira, let me come back to you. One of the things that our caller mentioned was the political climate as it relates to the evangelical church. I wonder if that was part of the timing of the film at all. There's been a lot made of the impact, at least of evangelical voters, say, on the ascendance of Donald Trump to the presidency. This would seem to be a culturally and politically apt time to talk about not only faith, but evangelical faith specifically.
Timing is completely a coincidence. We've been working on this since the middle of the Obama administration.
Oh.
We've been trying to get the movie funded for 7 years, and it just took this amount of time to get it up. So there's no meaning or political message intended by it in any way.
John Horn, let me bring you back into the conversation. I wonder what you what your perspective is in terms of the way that the arts and entertainment are dealing with stories about evangelism, about faith, about Christianity broadly. I mean, I think the last big hit that had to do with a crisis of faith was the Book of Mormon, which won a bunch of Tony Awards, but people dug it, not only because it was created by the creators of South Park, but it's really not about being Mormon. It's about faith. What do you see in terms of arts and entertainment and its willingness to engage with this?
I guess it's kind of like Old Testament versus New Testament. They're very radical depictions. You know, some are in one camp, some are in the other. There's certainly an audience for evangelical films and films that we would call kind of leaning in a certain tradition. And Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ would probably be the prime example of that. But I think when it comes to kind of nuanced depictions of faith, Hollywood generally either looks the other way or doesn't deal with it at all. And I think one of the problems is that, and I think this is why Carlton Pearson's story is so interesting, here's somebody who's straddling both worlds. He's, you know, starts the film in one camp, he ends the film in a different camp, and I think that is what makes this film interesting narratively. And I think Hollywood tends to be interested in, especially with kind of independent productions, there are stories that are super faith-based that would appeal to an evangelical Pentecostal audience, and then there are films that avoid that completely. So Hollywood has been really hesitant to get into that world because I think they realize, A, they're probably not going to do it very well, and B, if they do it wrong, they're going to be penalized and they're going to polarize audiences. So I'd say they generally leave it alone.
Although there are a few studios. Go ahead, Ira.
And I can say when we were trying to get traditional studios to fund the movie, that they did express, studio heads would say, like, no, we're scared of this material.
They used the word scared?
I can't remember if that was the exact word, but the idea was like it's a story whose central figure is saying that a lot of people are misreading the Bible, and they're like, we just don't understand. You know, like, they were scared of being picketed. They were scared of they were scared of protests. And to Netflix credit, they understood that it was a film that would be completely inside the church and the people who disagree with Carlton would be equally likable and they would get their say. You know what I mean? Like, we view it as a film made for a church community in addition to a second, you know, and they saw it the same way. Like, they were like, we have a lot of religious people in the Netflix service who were looking for movies for, you know, and so that was attractive to them.
Speaking of people who disagree with Carlton Pearson, let's play a clip from the movie Come Sunday. This is an exchange between Pearson, played by Chiwetel Ejiofor, and Henry, his close friend and business partner, played by Jason Segel. Here's a clip from Come Sunday.
You turned your back on us. You know, for 20 years, I put your needs ahead of my needs, and I put Gina's ahead of Maggie's, and I put your kids ahead of my kids. I gave you 20 years, so just remember that it is not me that is turning my back on you. It's the other way around. And I think that you should take a long, hard look and ask yourself why God would want that. The hardest part about this whole thing is that you had it. You had fellowship with God.
My fellowship with God.
And it was pure. It was true. And you are rejecting.
I'm closer to God in this moment than I've ever been in my life.
I love you more than anything. And you know that. But there is nothing that I can say right now that you will hear.
Those are Jason Segel and Chiwetel Ejiofor in an excerpt from Come Sunday. Juliette Vidral, how did that part of the film strike you?
I thought that was very realistic, and I also appreciated it quite a bit. It's one of the thoughts I had watching the movie was, thank God for Carlton Pearson that this didn't happen when Twitter was invented, because now when debates like this happen, there is a firestorm on social media. People freak out. People get upset and take sides. And Christians are not always known for being as charitable as we are called to be. And I thought Jason Segel's response, Henry's response, was so charitable and gracious. But it also exposes a lot of the challenges in Pentecostal culture of working so hard, giving everything for the ministry, putting faith in people, sometimes more than God. I thought all of that was very realistic and dealt with it in a thoughtful and delicate way. It didn't make anyone come across, in my opinion, as the bad guy, you know, just complicated people.
Tina emailed, I'd give the film a B-. It was compelling at times, but left me wanting more context and focus. Ironically, I felt the strongest storyline was between the pastor and his musical director, Reggie, which seemed to be a secondary story. Ira, talk about the Reggie character, which was played by Lakeith Stanfield, who fans of Get Out will recognize from that movie. What about that? I kind of did want, I loved the Reggie character, and I felt like Reggie was the one that kind of drove the conflict the hardest. He's the character I identified the most with.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's based on a real person in Carlton's life, and somebody in his church who was gay, who he loved, and got AIDS, and eventually died, from HIV and complications due to AIDS, and I feel, and you know, from a storytelling point of view, like, you know, it was helpful to have somebody who would push, you know, Carlton to confront, like, well, what did he think was going to happen to this person? And what's okay? Like, what did he think? What did he think was permissible to God? And would somebody like that end up in heaven or hell? So, you know, it was a real story and it's an emotional story. And it kind of pushes, if you have a whole film that's about if you sin, do you get into heaven? You know, it was helpful to have a real story from Carlton's life where somebody was doing something that Carlton previously believed was a sin, and have him grapple with what does he think.
John, it's an interesting time for us to be having these kinds of conversations, and in a way, they've taken on a whole new tone with social media. I mean, @Pontifex is the official Twitter handle of the Pope. So engaging in these conversations is different, more robust. It's changed a great deal.
No, and I think it's actually really important. And the other thing that we haven't really talked about come Sunday is how Carlton Pearson and his church and people he worked with judge the LGBT community. And I think there is a really important message about this film, about judgment, kind of the God of the Old Testament, who is very judgmental, and the God of the New Testament, who is much more loving and compassionate. And I think given the world that we're living in and the way that so many people are judged on their beliefs, on their political views, on their sexual orientation, that the message of the film, and it's a big idea, the gospel of inclusion, is incredibly important. And I think even as we're more polarized, what Carlton Pearson was really talking about is that God is compassionate and that Jesus walked with the oppressed, not with the oppressors. And I think that's a very important message, however it's disseminated, social media, politics, talk radio, for everybody to remember, even for non-believers. And I think what this film sets out is this way of seeing differences and seeing other people in a new light.
Many thanks to Ira Glass from This American Life, who co-produced the film. He had to take off, but we really appreciate Ira being on the program. So, Ira, thanks very, very much. I know that we try to stay away from fractional scores, but Kathy gave the movie 4.5 out of 5 stars. Kathy writes, as a post-evangelical, I found this film to honestly portray the fieriness of this issue with excellent acting. John, what about the performances in this film? Any in particular stand out?
I thought Lakeith Stanfield was fantastic. And like you, I thought he was really the heart of the movie, because he is somebody who wants desperately to believe. And he wants to believe in the church that he was raised in, but he knows that the church has failed him. He knows that the church has judged him for the fact that he is gay, and that judgment may have actually affected his life and his health. And I think in many ways, he is the personification of how you can have these theoretical arguments about faith and who's right and who's wrong. But when you look at his character, you say, well, this is how it plays out in the real world, that this person is left behind. They feel that they have no home and they're dying alone because the church has ignored them and has not accepted them for who they are.
Juliet, what about you? Any performances that stood out?
Well, I was very impressed with Jason Segel's performance and Martin Sheen's performances.
As Oral Roberts.
As Oral Roberts, yes. I felt Martin Sheen portrayed him in a compassionate way that I hadn't expected to feel toward Oral Roberts. So that was surprising. And Jason Segel really captured the facial expressions and mannerisms of, like, so many white Pentecostal pastors that I grew up knowing. Those stood out to me.
It's interesting, the portrayal. I totally feel you on the portrayal of Oral Roberts, because our image of him is as a televangelist, like this big, larger-than-life, very stentorian figure. Mm-hmm. And then to feel him in these really intimate moments where it's just like him and Carlton is a real, it's a big shift.
Yeah, it definitely, what I think I appreciate about the whole movie is that it humanizes people that we, I mean, I'm a Christian. I don't even know if I would say I'm an even evangelical anymore, but I am a Christian, and I can fall into caricaturing other people, other Christians, in the way that they talk and speak and things that they believe. And it was very convicting to see this movie and say, yeah, we're all just people and we're all just trying to figure this out. And it's complicated.
Dig into that a little bit. You said, I'm not even sure if I can consider myself evangelical anymore. What do you mean by that?
Given the state of evangelicalism and what it sort of has come to mean, it's become a much more highly politicized term than a theological term. I go to an Episcopal church now, and I was going to an Anglican church before. So those churches are very gospel focused. They're very Jesus-y, but the label evangelical is very hard to bear given some of the things that other evangelicals have said and done. And again, how it's become a very politicized term, I think it can turn off a lot of people and obscure the message of what we're all doing here.
Denise emailed, so glad Ira Glass's radio episode has been made into a film. The revelation the fundamentalist preacher had made a huge impression on me, a completely secular person. But his story was very moving. His loss is so huge, and the distance we need to go to see all peoples as loved and part of the human family make me so grateful for his story. There are some people who have expressed not really gratitude, I wouldn't say ingratitude, but certainly critique of Come Sunday, including one of the people who is depicted in the film. Remember that scene at the end where he's confronted by all the bishops? The main bishop who calls him and says, maybe you'd like to come down and explain yourself. That was Bishop J. Delano Ellis. He was played by Vondi Curtis Hall in the movie. Well, he's a real person, and he has a congregation, and he preached on this movie last Sunday. The president of the governing body of Pentecostal preachers that ultimately denounced Pearson as a heretic had quite a few things to say about Come Sunday.
So the movie is just theater. He just needed to make some money. He can't keep a church. Don't be gullible. Don't fall for. And his theme was not love. In that movie, he talked about the love of God. No, he didn't. He denigrated everything we believe in Holy Scripture and said there was no need to turn to Jesus for salvation. That's false doctrine.
Juliet, I wonder how we engage with the question that the bishop raised. I mean, the Bible is very clear about the risks of misleading people with false doctrine. Jesus said, it's better to tie a millstone around your neck and cast yourself into the sea than to lead one of my little ones astray. So the question kind of has to be asked, how does Carlton Pearson know that he's right? And I appreciate that he's got a very loving message, but scripturally, I'm not sure how we have that conversation.
Sure.
And I'm not asking you to solve the problem, right. But I'm just trying to think about how we have that conversation.
Yeah, I think it's very easy to have the conversation, actually, because there are scriptures, and they show this in the movie, there are scriptures that make it very clear that it is only through belief in Jesus's atonement that you are saved. And then there are other scriptures that kind of muddy the waters a little bit and show, oh, well, maybe he died for the whole world. And I think what is important is for people of faith, Christians who take these questions seriously, to get together and have these conversations and pray and wrestle with it and go back always to the nature and the character of God. One challenge I saw, and I saw this growing up as well. I mean, I did not come to my faith until I was much older. I was a teenager. I left the faith and then came back to it in my mid-20s. And part of that was because it was very hard for me to be in a place where I couldn't question things and I couldn't doubt. And I think what I needed to know was who God is and whether God was worth knowing or following. And if that question can't be answered, if you're just doing this because you're afraid, or you're just doing this because it seems like the right thing to do, you don't get married to someone because you're just afraid. You choose someone because of who they are. And I think if we're not looking at who God is and the nature of God and God's character and what the scriptures say about God's character and love, that's where we have to start.
John, I wonder, as we wind it down, how you see this debate kind of playing out through art, through entertainment. I mean, there is a real theological question to ask about. I would love to discuss whether people feel that Carlton Pearson was right or whether he was wrong and why. I mean, there's scriptures on either side. It was interesting how the film dealt with that. I don't know if the film was the right venue to answer that question, but how well do you feel the film kind of wrestled with it, at least?
I think it did an excellent job. And I think one of the fundamental tenets of faith is that it is faith, that you have to question your assumptions. There are no set rules. There's no set Bible, so to speak, about what you should and should not believe. And people could interpret anything that they read in any number of ways. And I think one of the things that this film really raises is that there's no right and wrong answer. You can say, the Bible tells me this, the Bible tells me that. I ultimately come back to this whole idea that God is love. And I think Juliet mentioned that earlier. And I think as people kind of wrestle with their faith and look at this film and try to examine what it is that they believe, I think even if they're asking the questions, regardless if they're going to change their minds, if they're engaging in the questions that Carlton Pearson engaged with himself, I think that's a start. You may not change your mind. You may not abandon what it is that you believed, but at least you're going to challenge your faith. And I think that's a fundamental question of faith. It's like you always have to question it because sometimes it's going to succeed. Sometimes it's going to fail, but you have to test yourself and test your beliefs. And that's the message of this film.
Before we wrap up, I appreciate both of you sharing your thoughts on this film. John, I wonder what other films we should be looking out for. I know we got to pick some movie club choices for later in the year. Anything on your horizon that you think people should keep an eye out for?
I think very consistent with Come Sunday, we have to talk about Deadpool 2. I mean, how great does that movie look? It dropped a new trailer today. There's no movie I'm looking forward to more than Deadpool 2.
Hold on, wait. There's a new
trailer.
Deadpool 2.
Oh, he's going to Google it right now. You cannot
darn right
play
I'm,
this on
the show's
the
over. You darn right I'm going to Google it right now. John Horn, host of KPCC's The Frame, honorary vice president of the 1A Movie Club. Mr. Vice President, you never cease to impress, including with the trailer. Thanks for letting me know, and thanks for talking to us.
My pleasure.
And Juliet Vidral, contributing writer for Sojourners Magazine. Julie, thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.